Welcome back, everybody, into the CC Podcast. It is the morning of Wednesday, May 10th. Mike Rutherford here in Louisville, Kentucky. Dan Senard in Columbus, Ohio. We've got some somber stuff to get to. We're going to talk a lot about Denny Crum today. We'll talk a little bit about the latest men's basketball roster developments. Before we do any of that, though, I'm going to say hey to Dan. How are you? Happy post-Derby week. Have you recovered yet up there in Columbus?
I've recovered. My bank account has not was not I think it was quite the opposite of you. Really had zero success in the Derby. Par for the course there, but it was a good time. We had some people over, and we had a real good time with them. But yeah, the post-Derby blues are in full effect.
Shout to Mage, big time winner on Saturday. It was a great derby for your boy. I enjoyed it. I did love. I was at. We had it with the derby party as well. And like, I had like 100 to win on Mage, and I had some other bets that hit. And I'm like, oh, some of these guys, some of them I knew, some of them I didn't know. They're impressed, and we're talking about it. And this girl in the back is like, "Oh my God, my dad had 500 to win on Mage." I was like, "Get the fuck out of here!" Like, that's like this is my moment. Or to drop kick her through the wall. But it was a good time. I did go to we went to Silk's Bash on Friday night, which is a great event. Can't recommend it highly enough if you're looking for a Derby Eve party. It's at Locust Grove. It's very cool. And I was talking to a couple other people who I knew via friends of friends. Shout out to my guy, Jimmy, if you're listening to this. But he's a big fan. Like, one of the first things he says, he comes over, he's talking to me, because yeah, our friend Dan, Kevin Barger, introduces us. And he's like, "Oh," he's like, "I know Mike Rutherford. I know, and he's like, "Is Dan here?" I was like, "God damn it." I was like, the Dan legend in Louisville continues to grow here. You need to move back here very quickly and capitalize on this.
That's awesome. Shout out to him. I did want to tell this Derby story real quick, just because I don't know if this happens to anyone else. Like, I had all my bets in, obviously put it in a panic, like I do it every single year. And like when the race went off, like I don't know, I just kind of like it's the weirdest 2 minutes because I just kind of like lose focus of everything. Like when they're coming home, I don't even know like which horse. I like pick out a horse that I feel like I don't even have money on, and I'm like trying to watch it the whole way. So when the eight came through, I was so rattled because I had like whatever Dermis Sogataki and like all my bet. But when the eight came through, I just like sat there stunned because I was like looking at Tappet Trice the whole time, and like the guy next to me was like, he was like eight, like. Who's eight? And I was like, Dermis Sogataki. Like, I just sat there for like 10 seconds. I was like, wait, no, he's 17. Like, I don't even know like what happened. And then I was like, oh, I did lose everything. But yeah, that's, I don't know if that happens to anyone else, but it's usually an out of body experience for me.
It does remind me of one of my favorite stories of you, which this can count as Dan of the Dumps today, but it was the Breeders' Cup in, it was 2011, because it was the same day that Louisville upset West Virginia, which
Yeah.
Charlie Strong was here. And so we had been drinking like all day. It was my old house. I lived with our buddy Brandon Lytle. And so you came over, a bunch of friends came over. We celebrated the Louisville game. We got a little bit too celebratory during the afternoon. So by the time Breeders' Cup rolls around, like we are just 15 sheets to the wind. And so the Breeders' Cup Classic race goes down, and like, I don't, it was like an upset win. It was whoever it was, like I don't even remember who ended up
Was it
winning.
Drosselmeyer? I don't
It may
even know.
have been Drosselmeyer, but like we all were trying to figure out who it was, and you're like, "Buckle up, Buttercup, buckle up, Buttercup." And I was like, "No, I was like, I think it was Drosselmeyer." And you're like looking at your program, and you're like, "No, dude, it's fucking Buckle Up, Buttercup." And we finally look over, and you're on the wrong race.
Yeah, that was a tough scene for sure.
It's just the best possible racehorse name to be just totally flummoxed by a situation. You're like, "Buckle up, Buttercup, buckle up, Buttercup."
Yeah, shout out to my boy
Oh.
Buckle Up. But yeah, that was a tough one to recover from.
I think nobody had a winner there, so it made it a little bit easier. But shout out to Mage. Shout out to our guy Damon Stinson, U of L alum, who's one of the owners of Mage. Had him on the show earlier this week. It was a solid derby all the way around. A good champion. Maybe we can get a triple crown out of it. We'll see. But we're here primarily to talk about what happened yesterday. And it is, it, I mean, I'm assuming everybody listening is aware at this point, but the passing of Denny Crum, who died at 86 Tuesday morning. I'd gotten word early in the morning that something was had probably happened or was going to happen or it may have already happened. I waited to get the official word until I think it was like 12:30, and then obviously the news spread very, very quickly. It's one of those days, and you know it's coming. I mean, whenever somebody gets into the 80s, like it's a topic that you can't really just avoid anymore. And then with Denny, he'd had multiple strokes in recent years. There was the scare a few months ago when the reports were circulating that, you know, maybe his health was really failing and that something was imminent. Thankfully, it wasn't at that time. But then we get the word yesterday that it was the real deal. And so you're prepared for it in a way, but it doesn't make it any easier. I mean, when I get the text that, you know, it's happened, it's official, he's gone. You know, my heart drops. I get that sinking feeling in my stomach. You get those, you know, kind of the goosebumps. It doesn't cushion the blow at all to know that it's possible. So it was, you know, a day of mourning throughout the city of Louisville and in the entire college basketball world. We'll dive into Denny's story and how he affected our lives as we move on. But Dan, just first and foremost, like your initial thoughts yesterday when you hear the news, because I mean, you know, for you and I, like Denny was, I think you said it on Twitter, like he was basically our childhood growing up and becoming Louisville best basketball diehards.
Oh, 100%. You know, obviously very sad news. And like you said, you know, we'd kind of gotten to that point where, you know, you didn't want to talk about it, but you knew that, you know, things were probably, you know, not in a great spot after what we've heard the past year or two. But it really it doesn't make it, you know, any easier. I mean, he was pretty much the face of the city that I lived in, you know, growing up. And, you know, when someone like that passes away, it's weird. It almost feels like a part of you has le like a part of you has left, and that kind of is like a piece of my childhood is gone. So, just very tough news all around. And yeah, I mean, when these things happen, you know, it's tough, but it's so cool to, like, you know, that is one aspect of social media that I love, is everyone is sharing all their Denny stories. And you know, it just brings to light what an amazing human he was, and you know, how much he did for the city. And, you know, basically, I mean, he is Louisville basketball. I mean, he's the reason, you know, that we are what we are. And it's a tough pill to swallow.
He's definitely one of those guys that I think that you get to a certain point. I know people nationally used to talk about, I think, Dick Clark like this, but you just, even as they continue to get older and you see their health kind of fail and they start to look more and more frail, like you just can't imagine them ever moving on. You can't imagine life without them. And it's going to be so strange to, you know, watch or go to men's basketball games at the Yum Center next year and not have him sit there, not see him on the Jumbotron, not see, you know, him get the requisite shot that they show on television. It just felt like he was going to be around forever at some point. And now that he's not, it feels wrong. It feels wrong to live in a world where Denny Crum is not here. I think, you know, I talked to a number of people yesterday. We had Kenny Klein and Scott Davenport and Paul Rodgers on the show, and one of the things that just kept coming up was, you know, Denny Crum, the story of his like love affair with the city of Louisville and U of L men's basketball, it's almost like not believable in this day and age. Like, this is a guy who was a West Coast lifer, learns basketball at UCLA, goes to UCLA, becomes kind of the protege of the greatest college basketball coach of all time at John in John Wooden, comes across the country to a Louisville program that was good at that point. Like, it wasn't like Louisville had no history. They'd been to a Final Four. Peck Hickman had the program in a good spot. He elevates it to another level, goes to a Final Four in his first season, goes to another one in 75, has the opportunity to come back and become like the next UCLA coach to build on the greatest college basketball legacy of all time, and says thanks but no thanks. Sticks it out at Louisville, turns Louisville into a national basketball powerhouse. Could have left after that, doesn't do that. And then even after all the ugliness of the way that his coaching career ended here, the back and forth, being essentially forced out in 2001, he doesn't go coach anywhere else. He doesn't move anywhere else. Louisville's his home. He stays true to the program. He attends all the games. He says in his final speech to the fans, like, "Please be a Cardinal. Please keep going to games. I'm a Cardinal for life." All this stuff. It's just he's not even a throwback, because that was not the norm even back then. It's an unbelievable story. He is what every fan dreams of having when they hire a new head coach, whether we're talking pro sports, college sports, what have you. Every fan base dreams of hiring a guy who takes their program, takes their team, takes their franchise to another level, and then falls so much in love with the city, the organization, the school, the fan base, the whatever, that he just stays forever. In 99.9% of the cases, that's just a pipe dream. Denny Crum is that dream realized. Like he is what every fan base wants, and we should feel so fortunate that we got the opportunity to experience that.
Yeah, I mean, the best thing I can say about Denny is he won games, he lost games, and he handled every situation that was thrown his way with about as much grace and dignity as you could possibly want from, like, a leader of not just a program, but a leader of a city. I think it's what always sticks out to me is, I mean, I got here in like 91. I actually was born in Chicago. Fun fact about me, my first ever sporting event game was a DePaul versus Louisville basketball game when I lived in Chicago. And, you know, talking to my dad about it, it's pretty neat because DePaul was actually really good at the time. They had Mark McGuire. But listening to him kind of like harking back, he was like, you know, when Louisville came in town, it was the show. Like, they were the program that you wanted to see. So when we moved to Louisville, it was a pretty seamless transition. You know, I was only 6 or 7 at the time, but after going to a game or two, I fell in love with the program, obviously. But it's so great that, like, when you go, like, back in the day when you went to a Louisville basketball game, it was more than a basketball game. It was like a social event. Like, you know, you had such a mix that you had an older fan base, but you also had, you know, young guys there as well. You had, you know, the Freedom Hall nostalgia. You had, you know, running out onto the court being led by, like, the Louisville flags with, you know, the marching band blasting. And God, I just have so many different memories, especially just like hanging out with my family growing up, going to games there. And honestly, you know, Denny built all of that. I'm sad I wasn't alive or, you know, old enough to see the 80s, but you know, what he built from the time I arrived there, it literally was the show in town. And I think that's a testament to Denny.
Yeah, you and I kind of we have different sort of fan origin stories growing up. Like I, you know, my dad and I have two significantly older brothers. One's 15 years older, and the other's 12 years older. So like they were teenagers when I was growing up, and I was like 3 or 4 years old. And my dad and them were diehard U of L fans. Like I never really had a choice. Like I just remember, you know, watching basketball games when I'm 3, 4, 5 years old, and like asking who the good guys are, falling in love with the Bradford Smith, like pretending I'm him on like that little Fisher Price goal and all that stuff. But like, we never went to games growing up. I think I went to like a handful of games when I was a kid. And then I didn't really start going to games until I got older. Like, you would take me when we became friends. A couple of other friends would have tickets. Like, I'd go with them. But like, for you, I mean, you being a transplant, spending your first few years in Chicago and then coming here, like you kind of like, I feel like you fell in love with Cardinal sports by going to the games. Like you always had tickets. You know, you were very much embedded in that like game day culture. And when I started going to games, it was kind of cool, like seeing that different aspect of fandom. I was very much embedded in like the watching Don Russell on WDRB and counting how many times he screwed up, and you know, seeing my dad get so mad on the couch growing up. But like for you, it felt like, you know, you're so much of your Cardinal fandom, like the obsession that we still carry into our adulthood, is centered around going to those games and those Denny teams in the 90s, where, like you said, we missed the 80s, but there was still, you know, it's not like the 90s sucked. Like we had those moments that created those those formative memories for us as fans. But for you, it seems like Freedom Hall was like, it was almost like your second home growing up.
You couldn't be more accurate. I have so many memories going to the game, like the cast of characters in the crowd. You had, jacket waver. You had Sadat doing the handstands. You had referee shirt. You had the smell of Freedom Hall. You had Denny in the red jacket, like just the Louisville spelled out, kind of draped over on the side of the court, like. It really was. It felt like more than a basketball game, and the setting and backdrop of Freedom Hall kind of emphasized that more. But yeah, it was just something about the way, I don't know, Denny just did everything, the right way. I used to love, like, I would get in the car and listen to the post game with Paul Rogers and Jock Sutherland, and they'd be like, "Yeah, well, game was a little nip and tuck there." And Jock's like, "Well, I don't know, who was nip and who was tuck." But Paul would ask that. This was like, we loved listening to Rick when he was a coach. Like, his post games were always interesting. Paul Rogers had the easiest job in the world for Denny Crum's post game. He would ask him one question, and Denny would go on, I mean, for 15 to 20 minutes. Like, he would just go through the entire game. And I think that kind of spoke to what kind of guy Denny was. Like, he was like, "Hey, I know I need to talk about this. It's my job, and I'll do my best to kind of give you a clear view or answer to the game." So, but yeah, those, I love the Yum Center. I love going to Louisville games. I love watching on TV. But for me, nothing can be topped as going with friends and family to Freedom Hall and seeing Denny on the sideline.
The coolest thing about Denny Crum to me, and this is just a personal thing, is that he really and truly, was one of us. And we know that for a fact because he was, literally one of us for the last 22 years of his life, going to games, living and dying with the team, still celebrating. And I think that, we've talked about that on the podcast before. One of the worst feelings you can have as a fan is feeling you care more than the coaches or the players. And I think we got a little like some like I know that it's not his fault. It's just kind of his demeanor. But it would irk people last year when you saw Kenny Payne kind of like laughing after bad losses, and you're like, "Well, I'm not laughing. Like, this isn't funny to me." And so you always want to know that they care just as much as you do. And with Denny, you knew it was true because he stayed. He had every possible reason to be bitter at U of L when with the way that things played out at the end. And this is a man who, again, he built the infrastructure of this program. He made it a monster. He took this from an upper echelon program into a national powerhouse, won two national titles, is a Hall of Fame coach, six Final Fours, all that good stuff. And he gets forced out at the end of his career. Like, he could easily have been, I know that there wasn't Twitter back then, but he could have been sending the vague tweets. He could have been, he could have been doing whatever the equivalent of that was in the early 2000s. I said this yesterday. Could you imagine like Denny Crum on Twitter in 09, like the Karen Cypher story breaks and Denny just tweets like the eyeball emojis, like stuff like that. He never did anything like that. He never took shots at the university. And as much as I loved Rick Pitino and still do love Rick Pitino, imagine Rick in that same situation. Imagine, he gets forced out for basketball only reasons, and he feels like it's unjust. It's hard for me to envision him taking the high road, even though, swallowing his pride, even though he knows that this is wrong, knows that this is not, the way that he wants to go out, but still using his final message as the Louisville men's basketball head coach to be one of unity, to say, keep supporting the program. I'm a Cardinal for life, which is what Denny did. And then to follow through on that, it's easy to go out the right way. It's easy to, you have that final moment where people are saying, "Man, such a classy guy, said the right things." To actually follow through on it, on the superseding, the succeeding, I should say, 2 decades, going to games, still being a fan. He was in the intro video with Patino a few years ago, giving the fist bump. He did whatever was asked of him. And that's, I mean, again, it's all you could ask for in a coach. He really and truly was one of us, which is why part of the reason why I think he was so beloved here, just and why there's never going to be another one like him.
I think I yesterday's news kind of made myself look in the mirror a little bit, you know. And I mean, you know, with social media coming off a 4-28 season, I mean, of course, you know, things are testy right now, you know. But I hate to see kind of the, you know, fan base a little bit divided right now. Because honestly, I was thinking this yesterday, like, this is like the last thing like Denny would want, you know. And I know Denny was a competitor and he wanted to win more than anyone. And I think our fan base does too. And we want to get back to those glory days. But, you know, I hope, you know, not that obviously we ever want to see anyone pass away, but I hope maybe something like this can kind of unite and bring the fan base together and say, okay, you know, we got to get on the same page here. We're all going after the same goal. You know, this is the way Denny would have handled this. This is the, you know, the way he would have wanted it. So I know, you know, like I said, when it happened, I'm like, all right, I've done stuff in the past or said stuff where, you know, hey, I'm supportive of the program, but, you know, I probably need to, you know, display that maybe in a better fashion the way Denny would have wanted it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Denny, the other thing that really stands out talking to people yesterday is how consistent he was with his character. You know, he gets here in the 70s as a younger guy who's still trying to make it on, you know, make a name for himself. He sees this gigantic just boom for U of L basketball, where it becomes a national storyline. It's also a time period where college basketball blows up a little bit. It becomes a bigger deal. You're getting more national attention, more media, more money. Different types of players are coming into the program. Throughout that entire like 40-year run, everyone's like, he still was the same guy. I mean, Kenny Klein talked about how when Kenny took the job here as SID, you know, he's 23 years old. Louisville, it's the early 80s. Louisville's already won a national title. And Denny's like so approachable, just you know, coming to him, talking about the way that things are going to go there and all this stuff. Paul Rogers said the same thing when he got to know him in the 70s. He never changed. And I mean, it's such a rarity in this day and age. I keep coming back to the fact that we're never going to have another Denny Crum. We may want, I mean, I think that we always hold him to that standard. We always hold head coaching hires to that standard. And it's hard for us to envision, like when Scott Satterfield came here, and he has the initial success, and then there's the flirtation with South Carolina immediately, and there's this general feeling, even after we get over that he hasn't really bought into Louisville and the culture and all this stuff. I think we all just kind of are confused by that, because it's like, if this was good enough for Denny Crum, how can it not be good enough for you? Like, you know, I think that we always just hold head coaching hires, regardless of the sport, to that standard. We all want them to be Denny, and it's just, you know, it's probably not going to happen in more times than not. But we should all feel fortunate that we had the chance to have our Denny Crum. Did you, personal interactions, did you ever get a chance to, like, meet Denny at any point?
You know what? This is, I feel like, a good, you know, just kind of shows who Denny was. I remember meeting him at Dairy Queen in Middletown when I was a kid. And, like, I think that kind of just speaks to what Denny represented. He was just another member of the city. You know, he treated everyone with respect, but he wasn't, you know, he wasn't above, you know, just being a normal guy and a normal family guy and going out to wherever in the city. So, honestly, I off the top of my head, I may have, I don't remember, but just specifically that stood out to me as I was like, geez, you know, just a normal guy hanging out at Dairy Queen, someone that anyone in Louisville would do.
The first time I ever met him, I told a story on Twitter yesterday. It sounds more spicy and great, like in a 140 character tweet, than it does the actual story. But like, my brother used to always take me to the, remember the Foster Brooks Memorial Golf Tournament? It was like local celebrities, and I don't even know where it was, but Oliver would always take me to the tournament. And we're walking along on one of the holes, and like a ball kind of like bounces a couple times and like grazes off my leg, and we're like, oh, like, we'll see with this. And it ended up being Denny's ball. Like, he had an errant drive into the rough, and he comes over and talks. I'm like, yeah, like, you know, I think I said, like, you know, I said on Twitter, like, the ball hit me, which makes you think of like a line drive shot that knocks you over. It barely touched me, but he came over, he signed the ball for me and gave it to me and just kept playing, which was super nice. He just, you know, it was weird because there was like nobody around. It was just like just us. He's like, oh, and he signed the ball. And I'm embarrassed to say I don't know where that ball is. I know I kept it for a long time when I was growing up, but I think I was like 6 or 7 years old when this happened. And somewhere along the line, in like my preteen or teenage years, it might still be my parents, but I'm not sure. But that was the first time I ever met him. And then I don't think I met him again until like we interviewed him a few times on the radio show when I was at 93.9, and then again at 790. Was always super cordial, came into the studio a couple of times. He actually gave me what's one of the coolest gifts that I've ever gotten. They were marketing, he and another guy were marketing these bourbon barrel heads. It's like basically like the giant head of a bourbon barrel with a cardinal head on top of it. And then he autographed the middle of it, and it says like for Mike Denny Crum. It's one of the coolest things that I own. I'm actually looking at it right now. It's on my wall in my basement. But so that was kind of cool to see him as I got into an adult and this quote unquote professional career, and seeing that he was still, you know, the same nice guy who was autographing balls for me when I was 6, 7 years old and willing to have a conversation with a kid on the golf course. He just, he, and I don't think those stories are unique to me. I mean, I think that my dad, when he was in the 1980s, was a Metro columnist at the Courier Journal and worked for the Louisville Times. And actually, you know, U of L basketball became so big that when they made some runs in the NCAA tournament, they would send not just their sports reporters, but some like general reporters and general columnists like my dad. So my dad was in Albuquerque in '83 for the famous
Oh man.
Louisville Houston, the Fi Slama Jamma game. Didn't get to go in '80 or '86, but he was there in '83. And so he had a little bit of a relationship with Denny. And my dad always talked about whenever he ran into Denny, if in like the 90s or the 2000s, like Denny always remembered him, always remembered like bits of his life, what they talked about when he was covering the team. And just, I think he was just that type of guy, just very much a people person, very personable, never put himself above anybody else. Just, I mean, again, wonderful guy who's going to be missed sorely around here for forever.
Well said.
I don't have any parting thoughts here. I think we can move on unless you've got something else that you want to get out of your system here.
I mean, this is we wrapped it up really nicely there, so I don't want to go down this road. But have you told this story? Were you in the car with our friend Weber when you guys pulled out of the ball? I feel like that story is so funny. I don't know. Maybe it's inappropriate, but basically, I'll let you tell the story.
He was, you know, the old Ring Road days where, you know, it was the Wild West getting out of fucking Freedom Hall, like after games. Like, I can see, I know your dad's a big, try to like sprint out of games early so they can get to the avoid the
Oh,
traffic
yeah.
guy. But like, you know, we're at one of these games, like at high school. And you know everybody's trying to cut everybody off. Everybody's trying to get in line, and you know you try to do the right thing, which is be patient and just wait out the traffic. And not and like we're driving in Weber's old Horizon Blue Civic. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt here. Not purple. He was very adamant that it was not purple. And like this guy's like just totally cutting us off and like going right to the front of the line. And Weber's like honking his horn. He's like, get out of the fucking way, chief. What's this fucking loser doing? He goes, and then he looks over, and I'm like, it's Denny. And like Denny waves us. Weber immediately like puts on the brake and like backs up, like lays out the red carpet for him to come in front of us. And I'm like, you just called Denny Crum chief. But he was very embarrassed after it happened. But Denny, yeah, we were willing to let Denny cut in front of us on
Oh,
Ring
you
Road.
part the Red Sea for Denny,
Yeah.
100%. That's I thought that story was so funny, but
Like, did you just call Denny Crum Chief?
Oh man, yeah.
Not
Don't
today,
miss
Chief.
the Ring Road traffic. God,
Oh, it
that
was
was awful.
terrible. I mean, Yum Center's not great either, but that Ring Road was bad. You always got to listen to a full, yeah, the full helping of Paul and Jock though afterwards. That made it a little bit better. All right, we'll talk about the other big news of the week when it comes to U of L men's basketball, the Mackenzie Mbako recruitment, which we discussed briefly the last podcast, has come to a. I mean, I don't even know what to say about this kid. What's happened the last few weeks? Early, like late spring, early summer recruitments for college basketball players when there's nothing else happening, and you know you've only got 4 months until the players are going to be on campus. They always just get batshit crazy, and because there's desperation, they're not recruiting anybody else for the current roster, so weird shit always just happens, and that's definitely the case with McKenzie and Bacco. There had been so much positivity from Louisville quote unquote insiders about his recruitment. It goes from, 3 or 4 weeks ago when we find out that he's going to ask out of his letter of intent at Duke. It goes from, well, he's a Louisville lock, the relationship with Nolan Smith. Nolan recruited him to Duke. He's going to come here. If he doesn't come here, he's definitely going to go pro. And then it goes to, well, now he's looking at some other schools. He's going to take some visits. He's going to St. John's. He's going to Kansas. He's going to go to Indiana. But he's still, Louisville's still the leader. And then it's like, well, Kansas is more heavily involved than we thought. And then out of nowhere, bam, he's not even taking a visit here. He's down to Kansas and Indiana. We find that out yesterday. So McKenzie and Bacco not going to take Louisville's final scholarship. And, I mean, on the surface, it's not a shocking deal, I guess. I mean, Kansas is Kansas. They won the national title a couple of years ago. They're always a one or a two seed, it seems like. Indiana's on the uptick. We just went 4-28. But with all of the buzz, all of the smoke, I mean, you've got – and. I'm pleading with people. I know if you're getting your information from Nolan Smith or wherever, but this whole vague tweeting, I know that great things are happening, it doesn't do anybody any good. On the football side of things, we get a little bit of that. Like Brady Brohm, my guy, Jeff's son, who's killing it on Twitter. He'll put out a kind of one of those good news coming tweets with a GIF or something. Pete Nocta will do it sometimes. And we always get a commit an hour later. They don't do anything until they know beyond the shadow of a doubt that we've got a kid locked up and that we're all going to be celebrating good news in the next couple of hours. The whole great news coming we've been doing this for a month. All the tweets have insinuated that this kid has been locked up for a month. If you don't know it beyond the shadow of a doubt, it doesn't do anybody good, because all it does is get the very staunchly pro Kenny Payne tweeters thumping their chest and calling everybody dumb. And then if it does fall through, it gets the very critical of Kenny Payne tweeters saying, "Yeah, this guy blew another one that he had locked up." Let's just talk about these kids when they're actually committed. Because when it comes to McKenzie and Bacco, I don't believe fucking anything that comes out of this recruitment, because every fan base has been 100% convinced that he's going to go there. Rutgers fans thought he was definitely going to go there. You've got national writers who are like, "I'm not believing anything that comes out of the Mbako camp or the Louisville camp, because there's been so much misinformation out there." It has just been an unnecessarily dramatic 3-week run trying to follow what this kid's doing. And now he says, or the report is, that he's down to Kansas or Indiana. I don't even know if I believe that. He may commit to fucking Notre Dame next week. I don't believe anything that comes out of anybody's mouth until we hear it from the kid himself about where he's going. But it seems like he is not going to go to Louisville. And Dan, that is a major bummer.
Yeah, that's a bummer. I mean, we talked about this last pod. I kind of learned my lesson with this through the Amani Bates recruitment last year. I totally fell hook, line, and sinker from what I was reading on Twitter. And I basically, in my head, had already put him on the roster. And it just seems like we've had this situation happen so much that I've trained myself to not believe a word, because, whoever is putting this information out there, obviously, like I said last podcast, has no idea what they're talking about. And I'm in the same boat as you. I'm somewhat pleading with those people that are doing that to quit doing that, because you're starting to become the main root of the division and the fan base, I feel like. It just gets people way too riled up. With that being said, would I have loved to have the kid? Of course. He sounds like an all-world talent, no doubt. But, I still, we need to let Kenny finish out his roster. It sounds like maybe this kid from Marshall is a possibility. I don't think there's any, shame in bringing in a 3 to 4 year guy with proven track record. At a position where we actually need some help. So that's not to say I wouldn't have rather had the kid, but as far as getting wrapped up and everything and pissed off, I've trained my body just not to follow these people and believe a word that's coming out of their mouth.
It is. I mean, the number of, having a top five recruiting class is fantastic. So, like, clearly the staff can recruit when it comes to getting high level high school prospects. Not getting even a visit from Mbako is a little bit of a blow when you consider how much of a close relationship that he had with Nolan Smith, and the fact that he went through all of his, like, he didn't commit on campus to Kansas. He didn't. He took his visit to Indiana. He did not commit there. And so you're thinking, okay, we weathered the storm. We got through all these visits. Now we're at least going to get him here and show him, you know, what we can offer and what we can do. And I know there's a rumor out there. The same people who are getting information from, you know, members of the staff are getting information that Kansas paid him like $4 million to not take a visit here to Louisville. I can't believe anything. And when you hear some of the actual NIL numbers from coaches that players are getting, it's significantly less than the rumors that are out there. I can't imagine that Kansas is paying this kid NBA money to just not take a visit. I don't think that that's the case at all. But even if there was some sort of payment there, it's still concerning that he won't come to Louisville and hear what we have to say.
People are clamoring for us to open up our wallets. Like, I just don't believe those numbers. And I think one part of that is, like, I don't think football is having any trouble, you know, closing on some of these guys. And I don't think it's, you know, I'm not saying I have no idea what the numbers are, but I don't think there's a huge difference between basketball and football.
There's not. I mean, when I talk to, because I've had conversations with multiple people who are either running or who are playing a very large part in these collectives, and they all say the same thing, which is Kenny Payne has a extremely large pool of money to operate with. And I know that he doesn't want to do the thing, especially with high school kids, where it's like, I'm paying you just to come here. Like, we're basically giving you a salary before you even step foot on campus. I know he doesn't want to do that, but to act like we don't have the funds, to act like we're poor, to act like we can't match payments or NIL deals with Kansas is just wrong. We've got, I think one of the national writers called it a cannon full of money that Louisville has to work with, and that's what we have. And I can tell you for a fact, I know it helped us with Trenton Flowers. I know it helped us with Dennis Evans. I know it's helped us with some other guys that we've been in on. Like, it's going to continue to help us. So, like, we're not cash poor here when it comes to NIL. We can compete with the best of them. It's just a matter of how Kenny Payne wants to use it. We do now have one scholarship remaining. The only player that we know that Louisville is involved with or has reached out to to potentially fill that spot is, like you said, Marshall's Andrew Taylor, who's a Kentucky native, played at Corbin High School, went to Furman, didn't work out for him, has put up monster numbers at Marshall. He was one of the best scorers in the history of Kentucky high school basketball. He did, and I have to say this, he did have an incident in high school that was racially charged that got him in trouble. Got him suspended for a couple of games. It kind of became, I think it also played a part in why he never suited up for Furman. You can look up the details there if you want to. He has stayed out of trouble since getting into college, put up big-time numbers. The numbers are gaudy. He was playing in Dan D'Antoni's very much like analytical, heavy, up-tempo, high-usage offense. I'm not saying the numbers are misleading. He's a very, very good player. But they are probably a little bit inflated just based on that system. But he can score, he can fill it up, he can pass, he can handle. He's definitely the type of guy that I think that the fan base is looking for to add to this roster. My understanding is he's in very high demand. There was an initial connection with Ole Miss, who was perceived to be the leader. I think Louisville's trying to get him. I think they have maybe an uphill battle. So we'll see how it plays out there. But I think Louisville probably also is going to look at other guys in the portal. There's still a decent amount of guard talent available out there. And we'll see if they want to go that route. It's definitely what the fan base is clamoring for. We definitely want that second lead guard, that second guy who can initiate the offense. And we'll see what they go with. They did, and we have not talked about this, they landed Trey White from USC over the weekend, who I think helps you next year. I don't think he helps the big glaring weakness that we're just talking about right now, because I don't think he can. They're going to list him as a guard. I know USC listed him as a guard. He's basically a 6'7 guy who can play the two or the three. He can't slide over and play the point. He's not that type of ball handler or passer. But he's a supreme athlete. He's a guy with significant pro potential, great length, great athleticism. Great finisher with the right hand specifically. He's gonna have to get a little bit better with handling it with his left and finishing with his left. The jump shot looks good. I mean, he's a good mid-range shooter. I think he's one of those guys who can take a significant leap with his outside shot numbers. He only shot about 26.7% last year from three, but I think with the mechanics that he has, he should be able to improve on that. I think he'll be a better outside shooter this year. So I think, yeah, I think Trey White was a big time addition. I think he helps you, but maybe not the fit that people are looking for when it comes to alleviating their fears about the lack of help in the lead guard spot.
Right. I think, and I want to get your take on this, just the way that the roster is building out. Again, top five recruiting class, awesome. You know, Trey White coming in, big time upside. I'm talking immediate impact from this team. You know, there's still more to be done in the portal. So we'll see how that shakes out, but you know, I have nothing against these kids that are coming in. You know, the potential seems like it's you know, about as high as it's been in a while. But I think coming off last year, we do have an impatient fan base that is going to want some immediate success. You know, depending on how these last, you know, couple spots or last spot are filled out for the roster, I'm not exactly sure if that's going to happen right away. So are you in the camp of, all right, now that I see how this roster is being built out, I see, you know, huge long-term upside for this team. You know, if it's something where maybe we are right around 500 or maybe a tick below, are you willing to give Kenny a pass for another year just as, you know, if this talent, you see it, I guess, developing a little bit? Or, you know, is it, hey, we need to have at least a winning record or tournament or bust here for next year?
It's more the latter for me. I think that you don't get to reassess expectations because you were historically bad in year one. It's 2023. You've got immediate impact transfers who are available. You've got, I mean, roster building is just different. It should not take that long to turn teams around, especially ones with built-in advantages that Louisville have. And I think when you look around the country too, like seeing what Dennis Evans was able, or not Dennis Evans, I always do that. The coach at Missouri, Dennis Gates, was able to do in his first year, to see what Jerome Tang goes into a Kansas State program that had been bad, three straight losing seasons, picked to finish last in the Big 12. He immediately turns them into a three seed that almost goes to the Final Four. Iowa State 3 years ago wins two games. The next year they go to the Sweet 16. These massive turnarounds that a long time ago would have had to have taken slow builds, they're now doable in one roster flip. And so I think that it's a young roster. Its most glaring weakness was also its most glaring weakness a year ago, but
Yep.
it's still a roster that is significantly improved when it comes to pure talent. And I think it's a roster that's good enough, assuming we add a key piece with this last scholarship. It's still good enough to look at it and say, okay, on paper, this is a team that at the very least should be flirting with the NCAA tournament. If we're not flirting with the NCAA tournament this year, Kenny Payne's probably not the guy. And if we are, awesome. Full steam ahead. Let's get this thing done. But I feel like we have to keep doing this Lion King thing where it's like, remember who you are. Like, remember that we're Louisville basketball. Remember that the expectation isn't just a guy who can get us into the NCAA tournament as a six or a seven seed most years. Eventually, and hopefully in the relatively near future, we want to be back competing for national championships. It's a top 10 program. It's a top 10 job. We should have a top 10 coach. And a top 10 coach takes what we have right now and turns it into something that at the very least is NCAA tournament caliber. And if he can't do it, then I feel like we don't have a top 10 coach and it's time to move on and it's time to get somebody else. If we're, you know, if we go 14 and 19 or whatever this year, like
Yep.
that's not good enough. And this is it's a young team. It's going to be tested early. I mean, they're going to that Empire Classic. They're going to play two really good teams in I think like 2.5 weeks into the season. My intel says that we're probably going to play UConn in that first game, and then we'll get either Texas or Indiana in game two. Like, Those are three teams that are going to be pretty damn good next year. And if we go out there and it looks like Maui last year, where we just don't belong on the same floor with any of the teams that we're playing, then I think it's going to be, it might be another long season. If we go out there and it looks more like, remember Chris Mack's first season? We went to
Yeah.
Brooklyn and we lost both games, but we played right with
We look good,
Tennessee.
yeah.
We played right with Marquette, and it was like, okay, this team might be an NCAA tournament team. They might be better than we thought. If it's more like that, then let's go. But I think we're going to find out pretty quickly just how much of a step forward we've taken with this new roster.
I think you're exactly right. I think, by middle of the season, maybe three-fourths of the season, and we'll know is this the guy or not. If we're seeing, vast improvement in, both sides of the ball and player development, then I think we'll be able to feel pretty good. But like you said, if we have some showings against, lesser teams that come into the Yum Center, kind of like last year, if we start to see some of those guys that transferred out, balling out at Arkansas or North Carolina and really perform for their teams, I think this will give us kind of a clear picture of, hey, maybe we just it was 1 year of bad shit and now we're on the right track, or maybe we had the wrong guy here. So I think we'll know, probably by, I would say, January or February, kind of what we're dealing with.
If Jalen Withers becomes an all-ACC player at North Carolina, I might have to give up college basketball. Like, I don't know if I can handle that. I don't know if I can take that. We'll see how that plays out. I mean, we are going to play Bellarmine again. I don't know if it's going to be the first game, but it'll be early. And like, that'll be a nice test because last year it was a sign of things to come as far as like our just complete lack of focus on defense. And if we're not able to, I mean, like about halfway through that game, I'm like, guys, they're not going to stop back cutting. I don't know. I don't know why you think that they're just not going to they're just not going to keep back cutting you for backdoor layups constantly. But we never adjusted, and that became kind of a thing for the entire season. So if we're not better prepared to defend that offense, which is very difficult to defend, then I think that will be another indictment of year two under Kenny Payne. But the roster is better. I think that now you've got Sky Clark. You've got Trey White, who can play the two a little bit, who has experience, who was a all Pac-12 freshman team member last year. You've got Mike James, who played basically a full season as a starter for us last year. We'll see if Brandon Huntley Hatfield can improve. We'll see if Dennis Evans is ready to contribute right away. Trenton Flowers, maybe he's just the thing is like we just don't like we don't know
I know.
any of this stuff. We don't even know how much of a step forward these guys are going to take next season. It's why when I hear anybody talking in absolutes about this upcoming season, whether it's positive or negative, I'm like, you're full of shit. No, nobody knows. Sky Clark might be fantastic. He might suck. We've got no idea. We've seen him play 13 college games. I saw in Rick Bowes' column this week, and you like Rick Bowes is definitely one of those guys who's getting information directly from Kenny Payne. When Kenny wants something out there, he's going to Rick. And so Rick posted in his story about roster reconstruction, saying that Caron Davis is going to be the backup point guard. He's going to play point, 6'7", JUCO guy that we don't know anything about. Like my first instinct there is to be like, oh boy, like that's something. But maybe he's awesome. Maybe he's fucking great.
Right.
We have got no idea about the Danilo Jovanovic kid. I mean, I've got no idea where he came from. I've got no idea how any of this is going to play out. I'm very intrigued to see like the first red white scrimmage because I've got just no clue about any of this.
Yeah, I mean, you pretty much hit the nail on the head
I
there.
don't know what to
It's not
say.
like, I don't really know what else to say.
I
Like,
know.
we got to watch the roster build out, and I think we knew quickly after Lenore Ryan, things were not going to go well. I think like any, I didn't think we thought it was going to go that bad. I thought we'd see some improvement, but we have a pretty knowledgeable fan base where we can pick up on things quickly. So. I don't think there'll be any fooling us. We'll know pretty quickly whether, this team, has it in them to, like you said, compete for an NCAA tournament spot or not.
I think I tweeted midway through the first half of the Lenore Ryan game. I think my exact tweet was, I was expecting this to be bad. It's worse than I could have ever imagined. And that was pretty much the entire season summed up right there, because I'd heard some reports from practice that were not great. I mean, I'd heard, bringing it back to Denny Crum, somebody I'm close to, who was a former player who was at practice with Denny Crum, said that Crum actually used the word sucks to describe what he was watching. And I was like, oh boy. I was like, if Denny's saying that this sucks, then I'm lowering my expectations right now, which was hilarious. Just imagining him saying that, it was made me laugh.
Denny.
Oh, we love you, Denny. All right, we'll wrap the podcast up. We already kind of did Dan of the Dumps, so I don't think we have to do another one unless you've got something good.
Yeah, I'm empty today.
All right. We'll do another pod next week. Hopefully we'll have some more clarity on the basketball roster situation. Football's still killing it. We're very excited about that. Baseball, we got to get it going a little bit here. We need something to talk about in late May, early June, and we're staring down the barrel of potentially missing the ACC tournament there. So we need to get that going. But we'll have plenty
Get
to
out,
talk
get out
about.
to a get out to a Bats game, by
Go
the way.
Bats!
It, like, you really do. I'm not exaggerating this. They have about four or five guys on the team that, you know, you're not going to see come through the system that are this talented, and I have a feeling they're not going to be there for long. So, yeah, I would get out to a Louisville Bats game quickly, especially to see our guy Ellie.
Yeah, Ellie Dela Cruz, badass. Christian Encarnacion, Strand, raking. I mean, they are. Matt McClain hit for like the cycle last week, was the International League Player of the Week. And the other good thing too is if you just like offense, the pitching's not great, so every game is like 16-9 and stuff. Like it's a good product right now. Go Bats! All right, we'll be back next week, hopefully at some point. If not, then definitely in the next 2 weeks to talk more basketball roster construction and all the good stuff going on in the world of Cardinal Athletics. Until we talk to you again. Go Cards. We love you, Denny.
Love you, Denny. Go Cards.